Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everybody, and welcome back to The Stare Down. It's our weekly sports talk and real estate podcast with me, Sean Carpenter, and I'm actually doing something a little different this week, guys. I'm driving back from Chicago, Illinois, where I spoke today at the National Association of Realtors Convention. I talked about it on last week's show, but I'm joined by my regular co-hosts, Mr. Bill Risser, down in St. Petersburg, Florida. Bill, how are you today?
Doing great, Sean. I hope you're driving carefully and safely across the state of Ohio, and just a little footballed out after 2 days of college and professional football, but it's all good.
Excellent. And we're also joined by my buddy, Todd Meininger. Todd, up and coming Georgia. How are you doing today, buddy?
Hey, Sean, I'm doing great. Had a very good weekend. Was excited to hear your report about your gig today. Apparently everything went well, so I was happy to hear it.
Yeah, I had a really good session. It's one of those ones that for the people that don't know, I've been an applicant to speak at the National Association of Realtors, which is a gathering of all of our peers in the in one of the largest trade associations in the country. And 6 years in a row, I pretty much have not even heard back a response. And this year they invited me to speak, and I felt like I kind of, you know, from a speaker standpoint, I felt like I kind of nailed it, and got a lot of really good feedback after the session, and some business cards and some potential, hopefully future business from it. So I'm very excited about it. And thanks for your support, guys, both of you. But
awesome.
I understand I missed some good football in the last 48 hours. I did catch some. I caught some bad football. I caught some good football. But I've been kind of off the reservation today. So I'll once again ask for your guys' help on the NFL game. But why don't we start with baseball? In what arguably could have been one of the best World Series we've seen in a long time. And the Dodgers and the Astros went 7 games. I think when we last talked, guys, it was going into game. We just finished game 5, right? The 13-12 game. And then we went back to L.A. Dodgers did what they had to do in game 6. And then Justin Verlander and the team on game 7 was pretty impressive. Actually, Verlander pitched game 6. But what did you guys think of the World Series conclusion and the fitting win by the Astros there, Bill?
Obviously, it wasn't quite the game 7 that we had last year with the Cubs and Indians going to extra innings with a rain delay to boot and all that drama. But, you know, I think that, you know, that the Astros absolutely took care of business. George Springer, one of the most deserving MVPs ever, right, with that string of home runs. Got him started, got that early lead, and then they were able just to kind of keep, you know, kind of piling on. And I wonder if Dave Roberts for forever, really, because when you lose a World Series in 7 games, it's something the Dodgers will never forget, all the players and coaches associated with it. But, boy, you know, you throw Yu Darvish out there, and he gets lit up again in an inning and 2/3, and then Clayton Kershaw goes 4 scoreless. So if Clayton was ready to pitch, you know, I'm sure the second guessers would say, why didn't you bring him in? But on the flip side, Yu Darvish had incredible numbers in September. His only bad start was that last start in the World Series, right? So it was, for me, as a person who was rooting hard for the Astros and the city of Houston, that whole story, it was a lot of fun. It was a relatively stress-free win, but it capped off an incredible series. You know, that game 5 will go down in history, right? But it was just an amazing, a lot of fun. And what do you think, Todd? What's your highlight?
Well, 2 things stood out. And Bill, you can help me with maybe some of the stats, but game 6, Verlander, didn't he was just lights out. I think he gave up 2 hits and 3 runs. Astros lost, I believe it was 3-1 that game 6.
Right.
But God, what, I mean, how could you be dealing? I mean, he gave up 2 hits. Unbelievable. And then game 7, you mentioned Yu Darvish, having great numbers in September, but boy, did he lay up 2 bad pitching performances in the World Series. So I feel kind of, you know, the human side of me feels bad that that's might be his World Series legacy. unless they get back there. So interesting series, fun series. Glad the Stros won.
Sean?
You know, Todd, you talk a lot about momentum, right? And it's easy to get, and it's hard to get, but it's easier to lose. Boy, you know, you mentioned, Bill, the start that Springer, you know, takes one out of the park off of Darvish, and just the absolute key to get the Dodgers crowd out of the game. They were already sitting on pins and needles anyway, you know, having to win that game. But then to just kind of see, I think there was, what, 3 hits in the first inning?
Yep.
It was just that classic recipe for taking the home crowd out of it, and really forcing Robert's hand into not waiting too long for it to go completely out of control, right?
Right. Yeah, he had to. I mean, he brought Morrow in the second inning, you know, to close it out for one batter, a great reliever who was now done because they got a pinch hit for him. They're already down 5-0, you know, and then it's just – it's as good, as well as those teams can play, it's got to be so disheartening knowing that we've got 8 at-bats and we got to score 6 runs to stay in it. And that's assuming
right
that they don't score any themselves. That, you know, so if we want to win this game, we got a lot of work to do. And it's just a difficult situation. And, I, you know, the Dodgers made a little rally in the 6th like they seem to do every time, but it just wasn't enough. I think they it was going to be the Astros World Series, and it absolutely turned out that way. So it's phenomenal.
How about the stat of Charlie Morton, first pitcher ever to win 2 game sevens
in a postseason
in World Series history?
Yeah, that's
right.
Awesome.
Is it a postseason or obviously postseason because you can't have more than 1 game seven per series. But that's a pretty interesting stat from a guy who's not, you know, going to be a name off the top of your tongue when you say name me the top 20 pitchers in baseball right now. You know,
trust me, I'm a fantasy freak for baseball, and Charlie Morton, you know, with the Pirates was kind of a bum. You know, you didn't want him. You know, he was kind of a last resort, you know, during a draft, and he just wasn't much of a pitcher, but man, he was lights out for the Astros, you know, against the Dodgers. And yeah, I mean, for him to get that 4-inning win, right, because they didn't have a pitcher go 5. So it's at the discretion of the official scorer to give us, to kind of award the win to the pitcher who was most instrumental. Well, he pitched last 4 innings. It's pretty obvious it was his win. So,
well, guys, let's turn. Well, actually, 2 more things I want to cover on the baseball side. So, obviously, there was some post-game celebration. You saw Correa pose to his wife, and then one of the obviously big, you know, figureheads of the Astros was not at the celebration parade because Justin Verlander was getting married to a certain supermodel.
Who?
I believe in Paris or Spain or Portugal or somewhere like that.
Who?
Italy. Yeah, it was Kate Upton.
Yeah,
it was Kate Verlander. Is it Kate Verlander or is it Justin Justin Upton?
I like Justin Upton because now there's 2 of them in the major leagues.
Justin Upton
or Chase Upton.
That's great.
That's great. So, guys, let's talk about college football. Bill, I think you sent out a tweet with what's something I say all the time when these first playoff rankings come out, and I just say, guys, there's so much football to be played. Can we just stop already trying to pick who the Final Four is going to be? Now, the Final Four, or actually the first four, we could call them.
Right.
They did what they were supposed to do in the first week. Georgia beat a South Carolina team. I don't think Georgia was expected to blow them out, but, you know, just kind of that plug in and out, do what you have to do. Good running by Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb.
Yep.
Alabama, you know, takes care of LSU at home. Didn't cover what I thought was almost a stupid spread of 21.5.
Right.
But it's funny, when Alabama doesn't cover the spread, people think Alabama's not that good. they did what they had to do. Notre Dame played well, but they gained a lot of points by Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Which is something I think that at some point in time is going to be questionable. And then Clemson probably had the toughest game of the first four. But it's the people behind the first four I want to talk about. And Bill, I'll let you kind of pick which game stood out to you, because there was some carnage and there was just some high scoring affairs outside of the top four. So I'll let you kind of pick your poison, then we'll see which game Todd wants to maybe talk about.
I want to talk about the game, I think, the Ohio State. But I'd rather – let's talk about – I'll start with number five. I mean, they were able to kind of keep it together because they were – you had Oklahoma playing Oklahoma State. And the loser of that game is effectively going to be eliminated, right, from probably top four contention. And the winner, you know, will stay in position. And somehow Oklahoma was able to pull that off. And for me, I didn't see the game till the second half, but I saw the halftime score. Cindy and I were out, and I it was just shocking to see 38-38 at the half, you know, for two. but what unbelievable. And so I think that's a big game for Oklahoma, right, to be able to somehow stave off that pesky Oklahoma State team and the mullet and all that good stuff. And good for them to stay in position. And like you said,
and that game was in Stillwater, right?
It was in Stillwater. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a quality win for Oklahoma. They've got a couple of them now, right? With Ohio State and Oklahoma State. But that loss was the loss to Iowa.
Iowa State, who lost
to West Virginia yesterday. So that maybe would have been looked at as possibly a good loss, diminished a little bit.
Yeah,
got downgraded. Now, it's interesting because the Bedlam series, you know, traditionally is that last week of November. Usually these teams finish the season playing each other, but they moved it up this year because the Big 12 has now instituted a playoff game or a championship game because of a couple of years ago getting kind of shut out because of a lack of a game. So they were anticipating that if one of those two teams or both of those two teams was still in the running, they could face off again. So we'll see what happens there. But Baker Mayfield, obviously a big game. It's almost cliche these days thinking, guys, that the Big 12 is just not going to play any defense, isn't it?
Right. You hear it over and over and over every week. It's just it's the way it is.
Todd, how about you? Any games in that next little tier, or do you want to talk about any of the top four, how they looked? I mean, that Clemson-NC State game was pretty exciting. It came down to the last play of the game where NC State had a kind of a good look at a possible score to tie it. What stood out to you, Todd, on the positive side? We're going to get to the negative side in a minute.
I know a game I don't want to talk about, Sean. That was one that played at noon. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about it. Obviously, what stands out, and I think Bill kind of teased it a little without getting into it, was the Ohio State University losing 55-24 to a pretty benign Iowa team, if I'm not mistaken. They're at 5-3, just kind of trudging along in the middle of the Big Ten. So that game stood out. The other Big Ten game stood out was Penn State going down to Michigan State.
Yeah. And interesting with a 3.5-hour delay, you know, that's a
right.
Yeah.
But for any of the players, you know, I mean, obviously the coaches don't like it, the referees and the fans, but a shocking loss by Penn State, I think, especially because they, you know, possibly still could have had a chance to do something, you know, on that off chance Ohio State would have lost. Now, Ohio State would still have to lose twice because of the sort of the game in hand that they have with the head-to-head, right?
Yeah, and Sean, did you see the video, Bill? James Franklin, did you see the video after the game?
No. How was he?
So you got to see it. It's all over Twitter. It's easy to find. But after the game, you see him sprinting to the locker room, yelling. And the announcers were like, James Franklin, he's mad about something. What's going on? There's three Penn State guys that were going to the locker room. And he made them turn around and said, you need to go shake these guys' hands. You know, we got beat. We lost fair and square, but game's over. And so it was just one of the good moments in sports. It's one of the bigger picture things. This is a guy who's probably just gut-wrenched for losing. As you said, Sean, probably his chances of doing anything meaningful this year are gone. But he was still aware and in the moment enough to, be a coach and do what they do. And that's, you know, teach these young men how to behave properly in good times and in times of despair. So check that out on Twitter. It's pretty cool.
I saw Penn State is now under James Franklin 0-5 against top 10 teams. So, you know, one of those telling stats that at some point in time, you know, you got to start winning those games to become a true championship team. That loss, but the Buckeye loss, you know, boy, you, you know, JT Barrett, everybody wants to pick on him and say he's not a great quarterback. And then he has an amazing game against Penn State where he literally sets record after record and, you know, completes his last 16 passes and all this amazing stuff. And then he, I believe he threw a pick six on the first play of the game. I got to the kind of the watching party. There was the Ohio Realtor group and the Iowa Realtor group. And so they were all kind of watching together. So it was a partisan crowd, obviously. But four interceptions by JT Barrett. So it's funny how, you know, last week they talk about he's probably the favorite now for the Heisman. And now after that performance, it's like, does he even get invited to New York? He probably does. That's just almost from the career standpoint, but that was just shocking. And I think it's Urban Meyer's biggest loss ever, 31 points.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Very, very.
I'm sorry, Sean. Yeah. You mentioned James Franklin going 0-5. And I kind of scratched my head, but think about where Penn State was, you know, with after the Paterno era and the Sandusky and, you know, basically I was shocked at first, but gosh, that program's come a long way, even just to be relevant in November.
Of course.
It just hit me thinking about it. So
the rest of the top 10, Sean, how about so TCU, Wisconsin and Miami all hold serve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Wisconsin just not looking like a, you know, they're winning, but almost people are just like assuming that they're going to lose to whoever they play in the Big Ten championship game, and I really don't see them not making it. They'd have to lose out, which isn't going to happen. So they're. But did you see the stat? I think Booger McFarland talked about it on ESPN of the teams that have made the playoffs the last 3 years that we've had the playoffs. They've beat an average of four top 25 teams.
Mm.
Wisconsin has played none so far. And if they make it, they would have to have only beat one in the Big Ten championship game. So wow. They just don't have the pedigree. Now, clearly the game this week down in Miami is going to be pretty interesting because Notre Dame and Miami play. That's going to eliminate, not eliminate one. But if Miami loses, they're eliminated. If Notre Dame loses, I guess they could technically still kind of backdoor in. But they still have Navy and Stanford, I believe, on their schedule.
Isn't Alabama kind of in the same boat, though? Have they played four top 25 teams?
That's why Georgia jumped them in the
right.
That's number one, because Alabama, although undefeated and killing teams, they didn't pass the eye test,
right,
as they call it, right?
Yeah, no. Now, Bill, let me explain the stat I shared. In the past of the four
right. –
So go back to the year one when Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon, and Florida State were in it. Those teams, on average, played four top 25 teams. In the second year, those teams that made it, on average. And so they're saying that, you know, for that to hold serve, Alabama, by the end of the season, will have played Auburn. They will have played Georgia. They will have played Mississippi State. You know, they will have played teams in that top 25. And so Wisconsin just doesn't have that pedigree. But it would, you know, it'd be interesting to see if – let's just say Wisconsin wins out and they beat Ohio State or Penn State in the championship game and they get left out of the playoffs. That would be the second year in a row that the Big Ten champion winning the championship game would have been left out.
Penn State last year, right?
Yeah, but Penn State was a one-loss champion, not an undefeated champion. You can't leave an undefeated champion out, can you? That would be crazy.
You can.
I think it is. I think it'd be really hard, you know, then do you say to Clemson, hey, you're out as a defending champ because of a clearly weaker team? You know, I mean, that's, once again, it gets down to you're supposed to put the best teams in, right? And it's very subjective. And we saw that last year with Ohio State going over Penn State, even though Penn State beat Ohio State. So, you know, you're right, Bill. And so Wisconsin's that weird one. I think that game, the Miami Notre Dame game, could be really interesting because, let's be honest, I don't think Miami's looked amazing this year. They had a great finish against Florida State, a thrilling finish, a gutsy, you know, give up the lead and then come back down and score on the last play of the game, basically finish. But that Notre Dame team is really gaining momentum, and clearly, you know, that loss to Georgia is not looking as bad right now as it could have. had things gone differently in the SEC.
Right.
I don't know why, Sean, but I am just not a believer yet for Notre Dame, and I can't tell you why. I think this week will say a lot. Also, watch out for Georgia Auburn this week. Huge game.
Yeah, a huge game, big time game, and that's a huge game for both teams because obviously Auburn, I believe, still controls their own destiny. If they win out, clearly, if they beat Georgia and if they beat
Alabama.
And Alabama,
yeah,
then they would have only one SEC loss to LSU, and they're obviously their loss to Clemson, but they would then be the representative of the West with just one loss in the head-to-head over Alabama, which would be almost shocking to see Alabama go from, you know, a lock to out of it. I don't know where that game's at. Maybe you can look it up. I don't know if it's in Auburn or Alabama. My guess is it's in Auburn because Florida or Alabama usually plays LSU at home and then they play the other, you know, they play Auburn away.
I can't let you guys start talking about next week yet, Todd. That was a nice move on your part, but you've left out one very important game we have to talk for a little bit.
Yeah, can you believe Arkansas beat Coastal Carolina 39-38? 39-38. That's unbelievable.
That's amazing. Yeah. So let's go, boys. I want to sit back and listen to this conversation.
It's in Auburn, by the way, Sean. Alabama, okay. Auburn.
All right.
Auburn. Yep.
Interesting. The old Iron Bowl. All right. So let's talk about we spent a lot of time last week on Florida and the coaching situation. Jim McElwain gone. Randy Shannon, our defense coordinator, takes over as the interim coach. Some people maybe said he has a chance to, you know, be named the coach. Guys, driving over from Columbus, Chicago. I got to my hotel and turned it on, and we were already down, I think 14-0 at the time. And we were driving down for a meaningless field goal. Todd, you and I texted a couple times. I have never seen a team look, at least through my eyes, and then once again, I've never played Division I college football, but I've never seen a team that looked like they gave up more than that Florida Gators team that we saw on Saturday. And it was just, Todd, both you and I at the same time after the weak interception, and then they went right down our throats to go up 28-3. I've just never seen a special team or offense or defense across the league, probably leaving it all on the field. But it was visibly obvious that staff are not on the same page.
Yeah, Sean, man, where do you begin, right? So I think you hit it on the head. The frustrating part is it looks like there's no hope. People have given up. You know, Randy Shannon, if his audition was pretty short-lived, because that team is not ready to play. It's just disheartening. I mean, we have lifelong, not only Gator fans, but Gators went to University of Florida. They're not just, you know, fans who cheer on the team. They put their money and got sheepskin from it. My brother-in-law, Greg Drollinger, said in the second half, he said, you know what, I got stuff to do. I'm not even going to watch the second half. And it's not the losing. The losing stinks. It's the total appearance of being not prepared, the total lack of effort. It's just frustratingly sad to watch. So, unfortunately, next year can't come soon enough, and a new coach can't come soon enough. And I always say you don't want to wish time away. So I'm going against one of my principles, but God, it's just a tough team to root for right now and watch.
Yeah, you know, and some of the stats, I'm sure you've seen them already, Todd, Sean, you know what we're talking about here, but it's been since 1917 that Florida had given up 42 points in back-to-back games. 42 or more. It's been 100 years.
I didn't know that. Did not know that. Wow.
So, yeah, it's really, really tough times up in Gainesville, that's for sure.
And by the way, Bill, this is not a very good Missouri team. This was a Missouri team that was winless in the SEC. They were 0-4, at least 0-3, 0-4 in the SEC. I could look it up. And this is a team that just manhandled Florida yesterday. Just right. Absolutely manhandled them. And that's the disappointing part.
Right, right. And you're right. You talk about some of the, you know, Twitter and some of the video feeds you can get off of there. They should have. One particular play where the DB for Florida, I'm not sure the kid's name, just basically just gave up. play. And, you know, which the receiver from Missouri ended up catching, you know, kind of diving for it, catching it near the goal line, falling in the end zone. And, you know, that's just the optics are not good when
yes.
you do that kind of stuff. And yeah, that the fan base is going to struggle with lack of effort. You know, effort's just a really important piece of the puzzle. So, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And I mean, the coaching rumors are just hot and heavy, right? You know, whether UCF or USF or Oregon, you got all the Taggart and Frost and Strong and all these they keep talking about.
Well, and being an alumni and a fan, what's concerning now is, are you going to lose recruits, right? I mean, that's if you're going to hire a talented coach that already has a job, it's going to be the first week of December before anything's announced, right?
Yep.
Usually, coaches before their bowl game, they'll in between the end of regular season bowl game, that's when changes are made. So it's, you know, Florida fans are white knuckling until that first week of December. And hopefully they make the right move. It's just, you take for granted. You win and are successful so long that I just want it to be fun, and I want a good product on the field, good effort. But gosh, the days of Urban Meyer, it's 9, 10 years ago. Boy, it seems like a lifetime ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, Tebow's in his 30s. That tells you everything you want to know.
That's nuts. Yep.
Let me. So we lost Sean. He's out in the middle of nowhere in Ohio. So that means that I get to throw it back to you, Todd. And let's have our EPL minute. Why don't you kind of talk? I actually watched the end of the Chelsea Man U game today.
Now, what was the final score? I missed the final score.
1-0 Chelsea.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. A great save in the 89th minute by the Chelsea goaltender. This guy's like 6'8", right? He's huge.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Wingspan. Yeah. It was unbelievable, which came into play on a shot in close, you know, in traffic. And so talk a little bit about that. I saw that Man City's, I saw the top four table, and they're like 31, they're plus 31 in goal differential. That's insane, right?
Man City is the story. They have 31 points, 10 wins, 1 draw, 0 losses. So in 11 matches, they've yet to lose. Goal differential, you are correct, is plus 31. Man U is in second place with 23 points. So they already find themselves 8 points down. Then you have the usual suspects. It's EPL, I think there's 6 teams, right? The Manchester City, Manchester United, the Tottenhams, the Liverpool, the Arsenal, and the Chelseas. Those are, so shockingly, those are the top 6. I think in last year, the fun towards the end seems to be the bottom, but it's still early. But the EPL is kicking strong. I think Sean's Columbus Crew had an MLS. I think they won. I need to check that score. They were playing this afternoon, but they were up 4-1 in aggregate going into that. So I think the Crew and who they'd be playing in the next round, maybe Toronto.
We might have Sean back. Sean, are you back?
I'm going through some storms, and I lost you guys there a second. A huge lightning strike. I think cut out the phone line. So
gosh, be careful.
It's just the stare down. That's all.
It's just the stare down. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, if I lose you again, I'll let you guys finish up. But let's just fill me in on the NFL. It looked like we had a couple. When I stopped and got gas, it looked like there's a couple big scoring games. It looks like the Rams and the Eagles.
50 burgers. A couple
50 burgers, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it poor defense or what?
Well, Jared Goff went off on the Giants. He had 4 touchdown passes. Gurley ran for 2 more. You know, Giants are just struggling, right?
Awful.
That's even a better word, I think, for it. So, I don't know. I played golf with a guy today who had a Giants bag. I couldn't even bring it up. I just didn't even bring it up. I kind of peeked at, you know, I didn't say a word. That's because I
felt so, man, Bill. You're
so
good
bad for the guy. That's just not fun. See, right now, update while we record this, the Raiders and Dolphins are playing in Miami. No score early in the first period. Cowboys beat the Chiefs. How about those Chiefs going to 6-3 after a 5-0 start? So they've kind of crashing back to earth. The 49ers can't win a game. The Eagles destroyed the Broncos. That's the other 50-point game, right? 51-23, and that 23 came kind of late. A lot of that was late in the game. So kind of garbage time. But Osweiler is not the answer. What are they going to do there?
Did Ajay have any – did he play at all for the Eagles after the trade?
I'll check that out. I'm not exactly sure because I didn't have that game on. But let me. I'll kind of peek while we keep talking.
Yeah, Eagles are really setting themselves out as the favorites in the NFC. I mean, they really. And who knows with the Rams? Last time I checked, I think the Seahawks had only had 2 points. They were down 10-2 to the Redskins. How did that game finish out?
They lost late. They actually went ahead midway through the fourth, and then Washington actually had a kind of a late touchdown.
Minute two left in the game.
Yeah, they won 17-14. So
interesting. So that's got to give the Rams a 2-game lead in the West.
Well, I got your Ajayi, 8 rushes for 77 yards, one of them a 46-yard touchdown run. So he played for the Eagles.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I know last week I complimented the Chargers uniforms. There may not be a better helmet than the Rams with the white horns. Check that out. I'm a big uniform guy. Watch SportsCenter. Julio Jones dropped the easiest touchdown catch you'll ever see. And it was on 4th and 3, dropped a touchdown, and my Falcons lost 20-17. They are now 4-4. So trouble in Atlanta with the football team.
And don't look now, but I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are leading the AFC South. Is that right?
They're 5-3, right?
They are.
Obviously with Deshaun Watson, a tough loss for we didn't talk about that part of Houston, but Deshaun Watson goes down earlier in the week with I believe a torn ACL in practice, out for the season, which is just a shame because the kid obviously was looking to be probably the rookie of the year. But Jaguars now
tied with the Titans at 5-3. So that means the Texans are 2 games back and the Colts 2.5 back. That's about it. And then the Chiefs at 6-3, they have a 2.5 game lead on the entire rest of the conference, pending the Raiders' outcome. But nobody's better than 3-5, so the Chiefs are still looking golden there. Steelers 2.5 up on the Ravens. I mean, those are pretty big leads for just halfway through the season. So,
and I believe the Jets won on. Is that right?
They beat the Bills. Yep,
they did. Yep. Which
for a team that was supposed to go 0-16, they're kind of. They're scrappy this year.
Yeah, they're screwing up their draft pick. They're not going to get that quarterback they want.
Yeah, I guess not.
And the Bills were quietly 5-2, and now I guess they were brought back down to earth a little bit. And that game wasn't as close. The Bills scored some late soft touchdowns, if I remember correctly.
So they're 5-3 now. So they're a game behind the Patriots at 6-2. So.
And who is who's our Monday night game tomorrow night? Because
Packers Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay, Packers Detroit
in Green Bay.
Well, that'll be a must-win for Detroit, but it's always a tough place to play, right? Especially those in division games. Packers don't like to lose those, so defense is going to need to step up on that one. But guys, why don't we for a change have a short show?
Sounds good.
Yeah. So Todd, what do you got coming up this week? Anything? Any activity? Or are you sticking around the home course?
Nope. Got plenty of activity. Wednesday, having a big regional meeting, the final 2017 push. So we're going to be probed and prodded and poked at. One of those necessary evils. Seems like a bit of a time waster, but at the same time, you got to report up and let the factories know what's coming up. So that's on Wednesday and Thursday. There's an apprentice program with my company, and I'm doing a ride-along with an architectural rep who's going through the year-long apprentice program. So I will put on my best Sean Carpenter hat and try to impose my wisdom and be a good mentor. Exactly right, sir.
Awesome. Good for you. Bill, I enjoyed the episode last week with that mortgage advisor out of California doing some neat things, technology. Who do you got coming up this week on the Real Estate Sessions? And then what else do you got going on in your business down there with Fidelity?
So episode 114, I believe, is going to be J.C. Reedman of Amora Production.
Hey. I got a chance to see her yesterday. She shot some video for me.
She's 32 years old, right, Sean? And she's been in every state in the country except Hawaii and Alaska. And add 13 countries to that her travels. Just an amazing, free-spirited, super talented, a lot of fun. It's a great episode. You'll love it. I know you'll love it. That's going to be there. And then I have a really interesting week. It's, you know, we're coming up in November and we do a ton in Florida, at least. Fidelity does a lot of open houses, kind of like celebrating our customers. And so there's these 2-hour kind of luncheon things where we, you know, kind of, it's kind of a holiday-ish, you know, Thanksgiving-ish kind of a feel. I have 3 of those to attend this week and go, you know, press the flesh and say hi to people that we've done stuff with, people that we like to work with. And so we're going to do that this week and have these just kind of appreciation events. I'll be going down to Sarasota County tomorrow to help out the Venice Association, teach a couple classes down there. So that's my week.
Good, man. Well, hey, I want to tell you, sitting in about the 3rd row of my session today was James and Beth Adams from out in Arizona.
Nice.
Afterwards, James came up to make sure he got a business card of mine because he is he's the chairman of the convention committee for next year out in Arizona. And so he without promising, he said he was going to do his best to get me and you and maybe Jeff Chalmers on the agenda so we can have a nice mixture of real estate, mortgage, title, and maybe have a little fun out there before and after. So that would that be fun?
Oh, we'll bring clubs. That'll be March. That's golden weather, spring training. Oh, we'll have a blast.
Yeah, should be a good time. But yeah, cool. Guys, for me, it's one more week in my push of travels. As I'm about 50 miles from home right now, I'm in Columbus the next 2 days. Thought I'm speaking at my brother Kevin's engagement for them.
Nice.
So nice to kind of get outside of the real estate vertical. Then I drive up to Toledo to teach a class on Wednesday. Thursday, I am the keynote speaker at the Greater Metropolitan Association of Realtors up in Detroit. I do my rock and roll presentation there in the Motor City. And then I get in the car and drive down to the South Carolina game.
That's right.
They play. I forget who they play, but I go down to the South Carolina game that they play my alma mater. But I think I'm going to be wearing colors of the school that I'm paying for. And that's my daughter's South Carolina Gamecocks. But it should be fun. And then I drive home from that on Sunday, and then I'm pretty much home for a while. So,
hey, Sean, can you wear Gator whimsical socks or something?
Something blue and orange that's hidden. Underwear, maybe?
An ascot, perhaps?
See if I have any orange sunglasses and have a little Gator logo on the side or something like that. But, it'll be a – and it's once again, it's a noon kickoff. So, one of those games it's hard to even get excited for, but hopefully the weather's good and always good to see my daughter. So
yeah,
guys, good chatting with you. Thanks for making my ride home a little more enjoyable. And look forward to talking to the rest of you guys on the Stare Down. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter at the Stare Down Cast, or you can check out Bill or Todd or myself on there as well. So on behalf of Bill and Todd, thanks for listening to the Stare Down.